Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. Kenneth C. Davis, ladies and gentlemen, is here. Ken is our good friend, longtime Brain Trust member, going back now more than 11, coming up on 11 years that he's been hanging out with us. He's one of the great historians of our time. He wrote the book Don't Know Much About History and a whole bunch of others since then. Something under 100 books, which have sold something under a billion copies across the galaxy. And you know his books very well because we've talked about them on the show quite a bit. Brand new book out, though, now called In the Shadow of Liberty. It's all about unsung members of our country, the United States of America, who made a difference to our country but didn't get the credit. Right, Ken?
That's exactly right. We see those pictures, the famous paintings of Washington and Jefferson, the statues. But there were people in the background, and they don't have towns named after them. They don't have monuments. They don't have historic houses. But these are the people who were enslaved by four of our greatest presidents. And I tell their stories because this is a part of America's story. You know, we have this a dazzling new museum opening up this weekend in Washington, the Museum of African American History and Culture. And people tend to think, Jim, I'm afraid I have to say it, that slavery was some small part of our history, you know, done by a few people in one part of the country, and that's a tremendous myth and misconception.
That's only half the story, isn't it?
It's way more, way less than half the story. Slavery was at the root of American history.
Well, politics, not only American history, but the national economy, and in fact, global economy. The global trade, world was embroiled in and dependent upon on slave labor.
It was the biggest business in the world in the beginning of the 19th century, and certainly the one of the most significant in America.
And it, and you know, Ken, I've been doing
talk about the business side of it, but this is a story of real people doing real things, and that's how I like to talk about history, Jim.
And not I don't want to get too far off of the book, but I have one other point I want to make. I've been doing some research myself on my fourth book. And what I discovered was the slave trade to the United States was a fraction of what it was to other parts of the Western Hemisphere,
like
South America.
Absolutely. More than 12 million people estimated were stolen from Africa.
Right.
12 million.
And less than a million came to the United States, something like that.
That's correct. Yeah. Yet at the same time, there were still a million enslaved people in America in 1790 when the country begins under the Constitution, 4 million in America in 1860. The slave trade, the international slave trade ended in America, the foreign slave trade ended in America in 1808, and many people optimistically and foolishly thought that would be the end of it.
Right.
It just continued
but
to grow.
But these human beings were still with us, and they were families. They created babies, and the law didn't change, and so that it continued to happen. So let's talk about some of the folks in your story.
Okay, I tell the story of five different people, each one the legal property of Washington, Jefferson, Madison, and Jackson, four of our greatest American presidents. The first two stories are people who were owned by George Washington, technically. One of them is William Lee. William Lee was with George Washington every day of his life from the time that Lee was about 14 years old when Washington purchased him at an estate sale. He was with Washington at Valley Forge. He was at the crossing of the Delaware. He was with Washington in 1781 at Yorktown. He was in Philadelphia for the writing of the Constitution. Of course, had no opinion, expressed no opinion about these things, but he was there and witnessed to all of these things. William Lee, some people may know, was the only person that Washington emancipated in his last will and testament.
Huh.
But here's part of the story as well. We know that Washington has a beautiful tomb at Mount Vernon. No one knows when William Lee, perhaps the most famous African-American man of his day,
right.
No one knows when he died, and no one knows where he's buried exactly. His body was probably thrown in the African-American slave burial ground.
But if he was emancipated, does that mean that he went off on his own and made his own way?
No, he stayed at Mount Vernon where he got a pension.
As
almost the equivalent of a veteran's pension,
huh.
Which was very unusual because
right.
he had been with Washington every
right.
single day.
What does that tell you about
years.
What does that tell you about the sentiment of the slave owners and their many of the slave owners and their people? Because when we in some portrayals of history, even though these people are slaves and they're owned and that's a horrible thing, the relationship is not exactly a hateful one.
You touch on something so important, and one of the reasons I wrote this book, Jim, this very, very complicated story of the relationship between these people. I'm not writing about field hands who had nothing to do with Washington, never
right.
saw him, never dealt with him. These were people who lived 24/7 with men like Washington and
mm-hmm.
Jefferson and Madison. William Lee woke up every morning and dressed Washington and probably
would have given his life for him.
Most likely he would have.
And who knows? But what maybe Washington might have done the same thing.
But I tell the story of another. The last story in the book is about a young man named Alfred who is accused of murder. He's enslaved at the Hermitage, Jackson's plantation. He and three other men are put on trial. Andrew Jackson, the most powerful, famous man in America at the time, just after he leaves the presidency, pays for his defense and sits at the trial in Nashville every single day.
Mm.
Can you imagine what that said to a jury,
mm-hmm.
that the former president is sitting in the courtroom while these enslaved African-Americans are being tried for murder? So that gets at the complexity of this story. Jefferson, Washington called enslaved people my family, these people my people. It's a very, very complicated story, and that's why we can't just reduce it to
right.
Simple laws.
Do you think some of the founders who were slaveholders, as they were writing this document, saw the irony in what they were doing and even maybe thought, you know what, I don't know how to unwind this, even in my own life, let alone the country. What do you think?
That's completely the case, and it's the story I've actually been writing about for more than 25 years is this idea of this contradiction, how a nation conceived in liberty
mm-hmm.
was also born in shackles.
Mm-hmm.
Washington, Jefferson, Madison, those three in particular who I write about in this book, all knew that what they were doing was a contradiction to everything they
right.
stood for,
right.
everything they believed, everything they'd fought and
Hold on to that thought. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, the book is called In the Shadow of Liberty by our good friend Kenneth C. Davis. You know it's excellent, folks, if Ken did it. 20 till, stay with us. 20 after, I should say.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.